One of the things that we've been very proactive about is to undertake initiatives to protect our coastlines. For example, we've done much work in the area of reconstructing and using science, I would say, science and technological initiatives to what is both a protection measure and also aesthetically attractive, and that is a series of boardwalks, which is intended to protect the coastlines, which has allowed our beaches, for example, to rebuild themselves in many ways. And what this has done in terms of a benefit, it has created what I would describe as a recreational space for visitors, for Barbadians, who are able to better enjoy our beaches because of the accretion of our beach space, so to speak. I think that is a strategy which we've shared with other island states as a mechanism of protect our beaches.
How much is this costing the country?
Well, I can tell you what it costs us right now to import oil. We spend approximately $800 million a year importing oil. If I put that in context, it is more than we spend in total for health as another individual category of expenditure on education. So as two major elements of our national budget, we spend more on oil, the consumption and, you know, the purchase of fossil fuels. So what this means is that we are utilizing significant foreign exchange, because as you imagine, we have to earn hard currency and we have to spend hard currency. And so it is expensive, but we have put in place a number of mechanisms to encourage investment in renewable energy. I could expand on that. We have put a legislative framework in place to regulate the relationship between our electric company, Barbados Light and Power, and suppliers to the national grid, so that there is a structured way of supplying energy to the national grid. We've also put incentives in place at the domestic and enterprise level to encourage the business sector to invest in renewables. We've also put incentives in place for individual households. In addition to that, government has also seen it necessary to utilize renewable energy solutions on government buildings. So we are a government leading by example, so to speak.
What about at the household level? How are people feeling the impact?
I can share with you one example. There are a group of young university graduates who have been doing some research in solar energy, but they are researching it in relation to agriculture. For example, with increased temperatures in the summer, persons who are in the business of poultry production, for example, would find that their productivity, you know, in terms of the survival rates of baby chicks, etc., is negatively influenced by the heat. And the idea is, how do we reduce the ambient temperature? And these young people are working on solar energy solutions. And so it's that kind of creativity where people are saying we can identify problems, even if they're not manifested in their fullest at this point in time, but we anticipate with these changes, let us look for solutions to that.
What are some of the challenges that you're facing, and are there any possible solutions that you might be contemplating?
We have a single power company, and so the issue is what becomes of the traditional energy generation efforts of that company, and how does that company accommodate the power generated? And I think part of that would have to do with the rethinking of the role of the company, for example. But in the interim, what we're saying is that we have to manage the process by which people access, and that's where legislation has come in. There have been negotiations with the power company and with the regulatory body, which says, okay, we cannot open up the market one time. We have to have a phased approach. What we also recognize, and there's discussion at the regional and indeed the hemispheric level, of addressing the supply and consumption of energy. The fact that we are small might serve in the absence of other arrangements as a disincentive to some companies and so on looking to get into renewables.